Hey, what is going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented to you by Underdog Fantasy. I'm Vlad Sedler at RotoGut, joined by Jason Anthony at Boom62. We are back. We were off last week for the All-Star break. Jason was traveling, not the world, but just to the other side of it, a little family golf trip. And he is back today. Jason, what's going on, man? How you been? Long time no see.
Vlad, I miss you, buddy. I actually miss that cool weather in Ireland. This heat in Northern California right now is just kicking my butt. I think it was 107 today up here. So I definitely actually miss the misty 58 degrees of Northern Ireland. But great trip with my dad. You know, we were over there for 11 days. Something I'll remember for the rest of my life, be able to do that. We had seven father-son combos from the country club where I grew up at, and be able to do that, just so lucky. And, you know, happy to be back talking baseball, though. The All-Star break came at a good time, let me kind of recharge the battery, and got to push for the last 10 weeks now.
And we are about 37% of the season left, which I think is about the time that was the COVID year of baseball. I think that was right around 37% of the season. So here we are in the, not quite the home stretch, but we're getting there. And as we return here, recording on Wednesday, July 24th in the evening, Jason and I are joined by a wonderful guest. This man, he's a high-stakes fantasy baseball aficionado, incredibly charismatic and level-headed. It's a phenomenal combo, very unique. And especially in the fact that he's not a fantasy analyst by trade, but in my opinion, probably have the top-rated fantasy baseball podcast if he had one. He's cashed in the NFBC at a rate of 41%, a multi-time, like multiple league winners in all sorts of formats, and has cashed in the overall, which is obviously hard to do once. He's done it in the main event, the OC, the DC, and the online auction championship. Brooklyn-born, Jersey-raised, Colorado-living, the one and only Mark Winoker. Mark, how are you?
I am great, Vlad. Hey, Jay, how are you?
Good, man. Excited to have you.
Thanks. And I need a new Twitter handle. We got RotoGut, we got Booms, and then we just got Mark.
Welcome to the show. First time on the FTN podcast. Obviously, I know you've done the other shows before, so you're definitely no rookie as far as the podcast world goes.
No, this is amazing for me. I love your guys' pod. Definitely one of the few in my rotation. And yeah, to have a chance to be on with you is really exciting. You know, in the show sheet, you had this charismatic thing. And I told my wife and she's like, what? Does he even know you? So yeah, that was good. That's always getting some confidence there from the spouse.
Well, I think what it is you're one of the, I mean, obviously when we all get together for the main events and in Las Vegas, we all love to chat with everybody, but I feel like people seek out to talk to you because I just feel like you're sort of like a fountain of knowledge on just like so many things. Just have a really good, you know, positive perspective on life. And I think that's also very, it's good. It's a good vibe, I guess is the right word. It's almost like, you know, you're from, you know, NorCal or something, you know, the NorCal vibe, but just like, it's really nice to be around, and especially where there is a lot of, you know, competition, a lot of this and that in you know, in our industry. And not to say per se you're in the industry, you're just coming and, you know, doing our events with us every year and drafting, obviously a great drafter, but yeah, just kind of rambling again. Here we go. Off the rails right from the beginning.
No, that's really nice of you to say. Yeah, I try to bring a good positive energy to the live events. You know, I think us veterans have a responsibility to try to make it as welcoming as accessible to newer players as possible. So, you know, I try to turn on the charm for that. My fantasy baseball perspective, if you ask Mager, is not as optimistic and positive as I feel life is. I save my negativity for my players and my teams, but I think it was, you know, I think getting old also helps you in this way, that you are able to try to have that kind of attitude and you get a little bit of wisdom with age.
And then I will echo it too, Mark. You know, when I first joined the NFBC, you know, 6-7 years ago, I remember meeting you and you were just very approachable, easy to talk to, and you kind of, you know, welcome with open arms. It made the environment really nice. You know, and I always love seeing you every year now, and I just love seeing you and hate drafting with you. Nice combo.
Yeah, I don't like, I love to see you too and have no interest in being in your leagues. Same.
So Mark, we're having you on here for our special annual trade deadline podcast episode. So there, we're about a week away from the deadline, a little bit less than a week, and a massive free agent bidding period coming up this weekend. And so obviously a lot of things are going to change. And unfortunately, a lot of things are going to change after we have spent money on Sunday, when a lot of the trades will transpire on that Tuesday. And so a big thing that we want to do here today on the show is to try to get ahead of things, to make some sort of strong, educated assumptions based on maybe news or team need or the direction teams are heading and some of the rumors, and kind of sort of like we do in the preseason, like, you know, sorting through what's real and what's noise, and figuring out where these players are actually going to land. And of course, at the end of the day, we don't know the behind the scenes stuff going on with the you know, GMs and front offices and who knows who, and what kind of, you know, things can transpire at the last second. And of course, with Trader Preller in the mix, right? The Padres can always kind of pull something out of the blue last second. So we're going to talk a lot about trades. Before we do, wanted to I guess a little get to know you section for those that don't. You are, I know a lot of Mets fans, and some of them are some of the biggest Mets fans I know, but you are like an OG from the beginning, from like the heart of it, right?
Yeah, I was born before the Miracle Mets, so I've lived through both World Series victories. You know, I feel very bad for Met fans who have not experienced 86 and have had to live with the misery that's been the last, you know, 38 years. Yeah, my parents were old-time Brooklyn Dodger fans, and they transferred their allegiance to the Mets after Brooklyn left for LA, and have been Mets fans. My grandfather's a Mets fan, so just, yeah, remember like 1974, kind of the first time I can remember watching some games and getting excited. And yeah, I was a season ticket holder 84 to 86 during, you know, the real heyday, and got to see some World Series games there in 86. So I will always have 86 is what I tell a lot of my Mets fans, friends.
And who was your favorite player growing up?
Well, I loved Dave Kingman when I first started going to the Met games, going to Shea and watching the Mets. I mean, you know, the Sky King, just these majestic home runs, super imposing player at the bat, and always just really gravitated toward him. As, you know, I got more educated and more, you know, really into the Mets. I mean, for those 84 to 86, it was Rusty Staub. It was appointment viewing for his pinch hit appearances. I remember we would root for them to be maybe tied or maybe losing by one, so we can be guaranteed to get a Rusty at bat late in the game. And in honor of him, may he rest in peace, I name all of my NFBC teams Le Grand Orange. So that's been my nice. My team name since I started in 2012, I believe.
I myself am a Dodger fan, and talk about it a lot. My most memorable moment was, of course, that World Series for the Dodgers. Last time we won, like one in a real full season. And I was 9 years old, and it was amazing. But around that time, 87, 88, I started collecting baseball cards. And my first, bust, you could say, happened there with your team, actually. If you remember that, the Greg Jeffries card, right? Because he was so hyped. He was going to be the real deal Holyfield. And I know he had a couple of partial decent seasons, but overall a bust. But I just remember collecting cards at that time and watching games. This is like my first memories of baseball. How enamored I was with that ball club, like that group of people they had. I was just floored. If you really think about it, like, you know, guys like Hojo. And I just remember thinking like, wait, I think I saw that hotel named something. Is that named after him? Howard Johnson, you know, obviously the late, great Gary Carter, you know, Keith Hernandez there, Lenny Dykstra, Daryl Strawberry was the man. Like when he came to the Dodgers, it was like the greatest thing ever. You know, Mookie Wilson, Dave Magadan. I just really loved that bunch. It's a really great team. Not to mention the pitching that we hadn't even touched on.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are some great teams. And Mets have had a lot of dynamic players through the years. It's just they've never been able to just put it together consistently. You know, they've had a decent run of playoff appearances and I've had some good teams, but it's really been a struggle. And this season's been really up and down. My son, who's 13, he's, you know, huge NBA, huge NFL, but he's been tracking the Mets this year a little more. And he's the one who's had the faith all year and telling me that I'm a shit fan because I haven't been able to, you know, believe all year, but I will, I'm happy he's excited about it and he's kind of pushing me to really believe in the team this year. So we'll see what happens.
And we will touch on the Mets and their possibilities of players, some players you might be losing, but just a quick thought on what you've seen out of Francisco Lindor these last couple of weeks. In fact, these last couple of days, and me thinking about how during main event season, when I was happily taking him in the 20 to 25 range overall and being just like, that's a good pick for me. We remember all the pitchers moved up there and it came to the point where Lindor was starting to go in the 30s. I mean, there was a point where he was going like, you know, I saw some main event drafts where he was going like, you know, 39, 40, 41. I'm like, what's going on here? And it made me for a second, you know, that like regret, like, did I do something wrong? I got all these early Lindor shares, but he's kind of muted that over the last couple of weeks. And he's a beast, right? Like the only guy since the beginning of what last season with basically 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to trust the back of the baseball card. And this guy just produces every year, year in, year out. Slumps, gets hot, and yeah, he's carrying the team right now.
He is a habitually slow starter, right, Mark? I mean, I remember the victory laps first month or month and a half of the year, everybody was, oh yeah, he's done, you know, I'm glad I didn't draft him, and they got awfully quiet now, but I think I recall every year he kind of tends to do this.
I can't remember back with Cleveland, but I know with the Mets, that's true.
And then, so Mark, before we jump into some more stuff, I wanted to ask you, when did you start playing fantasy baseball? And then when did you actually get going with NFBC, discovering it and really getting into the community there?
I actually played my first league in 1985 in high school. We had an NL-only auction league. I can literally still remember whose house it was, like the feeling, just how excited we were to be doing something different and new. Because I've been playing like dice baseball and, you know, Stratomatic and just all kinds of like, you know, variations of fantasy, you know, before there was fantasy. And then, you know, then the book came out. So I just finally remember that Eric Davis was the big buy for me then. And I was the commissioner and we would wait till Sunday. We get the sporting news and then go to my dad's office, fire up the Apple II and keep the stats in a spreadsheet. And my friend and I came 1-2. He came 1, I came 2. And for years, and probably still, the other people in the league thought we cheated because, you know, we were the only ones doing the stats. And it wasn't very transparent, obviously, if you had to do it all by hand. I didn't play again until 2010, so 25 years. You know, the next year we all went to high school, off to college, and it just kind of fell apart after 1 year. So I didn't play for 25 years. Came back in 2010. I remember my friend was like, "Fantasy." I'm like, yeah. It's like, hey, listen, it's just an auto draft. He's like, you can change the queue. So I went in, I moved David Wright up a little bit higher than, you know, where he was supposed to go. I totally forgot that it ran. It was a total auto draft. You know, like we didn't pick at all. I opened up my phone. Was there a phone then? I don't know. Computer, whatever it was. And first pick was David Wright. And I was instantly hooked that second. Like I was like, I'm back. Started NFBC 2012, played a 125 satellite, actually won it, had R.A. Dickey that year, was like a 15th round pick or something, won the Cy Young, and I've been playing NFBC every year since, 13 years.
What kind of drew you to the NFBC? How did you find the satellite, and kind of what was the allure once you got in there?
That's such a good question. You know, I know it's everyone has an origin story, how they found the NFBC. It has to be online or something. I must have seen an ad for it, or I didn't know anyone who was playing at the time. I wasn't looking at magazines, so it must have been online. And I just, you know, realized that this was where the best players in the world were playing. And I'm like, I want to be a part of this. And, you know, I didn't do a live event for many years. You know, it took, you know, I don't know how many years, maybe 6 years until I did my first live event. But I just thought it was, you know, cool interface and scoring system. And yeah. And then I think when you win your first league, you're like, oh, this is fun. Yeah. I'm gonna do more of these. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you play in all the formats, auction, main events, high stakes. What is your favorite format of those and why? They all have very unique strategies and how to play them.
You know, I pride myself for a lot of years on being pretty versatile, being able to win or compete in any format they've thrown out there. And also, you know, playing fantasy football. Like I always thought being a two-sport grinder was, you know, something I took pride in, that I could succeed in both games. But I've really just totally migrated to auctions. I'm actually only have 8 leagues this year, and they're all auctions. So I first year in a long time not doing a main, no draft champions, no cut lines, no gladiators, just auctions. I love the format. It fits my quantitative brain. It's like a math equation with, you know, some qualitative data. This is just some of the things I do for work. So it fits perfectly. I love the money management part of it. And just having only auctions this year has really helped me, because I streamlined my prep. I only had to worry about valuations, and I didn't have to worry about rounds and, you know, team construction, you know, from a snake format. And I think it's helped my game. And I love the challenge. I know both of you play, and, you know, it's great seeing Vlad back in the auction streets after a little bit. Jason, you're a beast as always. And I was just curious what draws you to auctions. And Vlad, do you think like you'll play more now that you're having a lot of success? You think you'll be doing any more of those? And Jason, just curious your auction kind of love.
Yeah, I did one in Vegas in 2018 and then took a few years off. I was back last year and that was it. I was hooked. I was in the mix in the top three and fell out there in the last week of the season. And that doesn't make a difference of me coming back next year, because I'm competitive and I do want to win. But last year, we talk about it a lot, but there's just really nothing better than the prep for it, the, you know, being in there in the room. And so I love it. I think I'm going to mix in a little bit more. I think for the content part of things, and just, you know, it's important for me to have a wide range of experience so that I can properly provide answers for subs and people in the Discord. Not that it's exactly related, but one of the things I pride myself in is when somebody asks a fantasy question, I won't just answer it like kind of off the cuff. I will literally look those players up, confirm, you know, or find new information, or actually give a, you know, real reason why something should be done. So I think that, you know, even to me is important. And though I haven't really played keeper or like dynasty, I try to, you know, stay abreast of everything, so I'm in the mix, so I can be, you know, as helpful in it for everybody.
Yeah. And for me, I wish I was as disciplined as you, Mark. If I had a choice, I would do only auctions. I just love drafting so much. The mains are really a draw with the overall. But if I can do 8 live auctions, or if I had to choose between any snake or auction, I'd do an auction every time. That moving target is just, it's fascinating to me and my brain, and pivoting, because you can't go in with a set strategy or it's just going to blow up. And, you know, I'll never forget the first auction we did. I actually partnered with my buddy August, and we got killed. And he looked at me and he just, you know, we just can't compete with these guys. They know the devaluations, we can't do this. And when somebody tells me I can't do something, it motivates me even more. And I think the very next year I end up getting 2nd overall, and I think 6th or 7th with my 2 teams in the auction championship. So I've been hooked ever since that. And I made the mistake last year of, I think, doing 4 auctions when I was in Vegas, and 2 of them back to back. And I don't know if my brain's recovered from that. I don't know how you do that, because I know you do back to back, I think 1 day, if not 2, don't you? It's a challenge, but man, the most fun, I think 4 or 5 hour experience that I can have with my background just with baseball.
One interesting thing that you mentioned that just blows my mind is the fact that you had 25 years off in between playing fantasy baseball. Like that just is, it's, I don't think anyone's done that. You might be like the only person, and to come back at a high level and then use, your baseball knowledge, experience and all that. I think that's phenomenal. And then just the fact that you're strictly concentrating on auctions and you're not even looking or caring, I mean, you're gathering all the information and maybe listening and or hearing some things on Twitter, taking some as like, oh, this is good or helpful, this is noise, but you're not really caring about the ADP of somebody. So that's just really interesting to just think about how big of a game we have, fantasy baseball, and how many just like different avenues that we can all take in it.
I think that's probably my frustration with content. And I know it's like a chicken or the egg, it's somewhat of a niche, market auctions. So as a, as a content provider, you want to, reach the widest range of subscribers and listeners you can, while, like you said, being able to be versatile and answer all kind of questions. I feel like if there was more auction content, there would be more auction players, but it's again, chicken or the egg. It's tough when you listen to a lot of content and you're trying to always in your mind, you have to make the translation from ADP to AAV and just think, what are the implications from an auction perspective? Because a lot of times the conversations like, hey, can I take a closer and, two pitchers early, what does that do to my build? And, auctions, you have to come out with a legal 23 man lineup and everyone has to do it the same. So it's, you can more identify the build that you want to do. And as long as you know how to, to execute it in the auction room, you can do it. Whereas, obviously in a snake, you're at the mercy of KDS, you're at the mercy of all the other players. I still love it. I think it's still a great challenge. I do miss the main this year. If I can finish this year off successfully, I'll probably jump back in next year, at least for one, probably in Vegas to kind of get back in the mix.
Toby's going to be really sad that you didn't do the Champions League this year, Mark. One of the few that withheld on that.
Yeah, I like being a little contrarian there, although I'm following it. I check the overall standings. A lot of my close friends are right up there, and it's one that it's an auction that I'll definitely watch. I was just joking with them. I'm like, maybe someone will like hire me who hasn't done auctions and I can like be their concierge, during the Champions League final table if they make it. But no, I think it's a great format. I just didn't want to do, a main or a DC this year. So it just didn't make sense for me, but I'm definitely following it. And it should be pretty fascinating to see how that finishes off next year.
Yeah. This next segment, I'm fascinated to talk to you about regarding your partnership with Mike Mager. You guys, probably the best duo in the NFBC I can think of. Both are extremely sharp. The way you guys work together in draft is fun to watch. And then, you guys are so successful individually. You team that up. It's fascinating. I team up with Matt Modique on, I think, 3 mains this year. We tried to do an auction last year. That blew up in our face. So I'm interested to kind of discuss, how do you guys balance the team duties? Start with auctions with you and Mike, and then I guess you're only doing auctions, so we can just kind of talk about that. How'd you guys do the drafts? Did you rotate one person in charge of bidding, one person fab? How does that work with you guys?
Yeah, this feels like a Batman and Robin situation with me and Mike. If we're the two best pairs, I mean, this guy's on the Mount Rushmore for me, and was someone I admired from afar. His consistency, just always being up there in every league. Back in the day when Masato started doing his fast slows, I got accepted into that group and did a lot with Mike, and just every round, every guy I was considering, he takes every sign, boom, boom, boom. The guy is just amazing. So to have him consent to partnering with me was really cool. And I've learned just so much. you know, auctions are hard for partners. I've seen people really struggle. You have to have a pretty good division of labor. And I think it's both the prep and the actual auction. So I'll talk about the prep first. He does a deep dive on every draftable player. It's like, how many pages? We're talking 300-page manifesto that he writes every offseason. I wonder if he'll still be able to write this after all the writing he's doing for you, Vlad, if he's going to be burnt out from the writing and have to start.
He set FTN records for longest articles, but they're also could be the record for best articles too.
Oh, he's an amazing writer. You know, one thing, his emails and text to me have gotten a little shorter, I think, since he's writing for you. So that's been, because I'll respond with like one sentence, one word. It must drive him insane, like how non-verbose I am in my, but you know, he's an attorney, so he's used to cranking out probably, you know, 20, 30 pages in an hour. This guy, it's unbelievable probably how fast he can type and think. So I'm probably the luckiest guy in the NFBC that I get to read that deep dive of all, you know, of all the players from Mike's perspective. So that's huge. And then I do the projections and the valuation. So I aggregate a bunch of projection sites, including VDP, of course. And I got to say, Vlad, this is the first year I've used them, and we're having a good year. So that's, you know, definitely a big part of the mix. So I like that you were willing to take a stand on players and take a more aggressive posture with your, you know, your whole team with the projection. So I do the projections. I create the valuations. I create what's called the file. So the file is an Excel file, has all the position tabs and all of, you know, what we have them valued at, what the AAV is, the difference. And then we try to marry the two. That's the hardest part, is marrying the kind of the qualitative and the quantitative and trying to come to an agreement on the players we like, the players we don't like, and the players that are we like at a cost, right? So there's players you like at any cost, players you like at some cost, and then players that you just don't like at all. So we kind of create, you know, another file with kind of like a green, yellow, red coding. And then we go a little deeper and create kind of our target list, guys we're off of, and a strategy, right? The key thing for a partnership is having a common strategy and also liking the same players for, you know, 90%. So is it stars and scrubs? Is it spread the wealth? Are we going two good catchers? Are we going two good closers? You know, whatever it might be, we kind of look at the math, where the biggest potential profits, and we try to build our team around that. So we have a general strategy on, you know, what we want to spend at each position. And overall, the pitcher hitter split's really important to kind of know up front. And then in the auction, one of us will do the bidding and the other one kind of runs the file, so to speak. So if he's bidding, I am keeping track of the players who come and go, tracking our money, writing down nominations for him to throw out. And I am helping in the end game with like our dollar guy tab that we have, and vice versa. If I get to do the auction, you know, the only challenge with partnerships and auctions is you want to make your partner happy. So you almost, when you're doing the bidding, you almost tend to hold yourself back and
absolutely
make sure your partner's guys are getting taken. So as long as we're doing two each, it kind of washes, and we both get teams, you know, with a couple sweeteners that we really like. And, you know, generally we come out of the auctions feeling, you know, pretty solid with, you know, at least our execution. The plan might've been wrong. The players might be wrong, but, you know, we try to execute, you know, what we set out to do. So that's kind of the first part is the prep and then the actual auction. And then just to finish off. So lineups and fab lineups, I will set them first Sunday night, Thursday night. He wakes up on the East Coast, takes a look, sends me an email, makes some changes. We'll text, maybe talk if it's like a tougher call, make the changes. We're good there. And then Fab, we both add guys to the queue during the week. He takes the first crack at ordering and putting preliminary bids. I'll do some tweaking Saturday, Sunday morning. And then we talk for about an hour on Sunday. Now that's only two teams. We've had five or six in the past, and it got really tough to have that much time on a shared team with the solo teams. And we'll take an hour to hash out, you know, our differences, you know, drops and amounts and move it around. And that's it. That's kind of the process.
Which one of you is the guy that goes in and raises the bid 10 minutes before it locks?
You know what's really interesting? We'll talk about maybe 8 Eastern. So, you know, maybe an hour before, we'll finish up maybe an hour before lock. I'd say 99% of the time we don't touch it again on our shared team. Now, I'll go back in my solo teams. I'm adding, down to the very end. But on our solos, we won't. We kind of made our decision. And there might be an occasion if something happens late in that hour where we'll make a change. But usually we just kind of keep it as it was.
Yeah. So the best part of everything you were saying, it's like, you know, kid in the candy store for a fantasy baseball person when you're talking about like building the 300-page manifesto and then working the file and then managing it and talking about it. And it's just a nice reminder that when things are getting hard and the grind of the fantasy baseball season 65% into the season is happening right now, you're starting to get a little a little down. If you are, you know that you're just a few months from doing it all over, right? And we all love every part of it. And of course, going through box scores and watching baseball, but there's something uniquely special about those few months before the season, draft season, the way everything is just like the community is just like bubbling on Twitter and talking about things and getting into it. And just like, that is the time to like be alive. It's draft season. It's prep. It's all the, you know, the back and forth. It's the best.
Yeah, it's in some ways better than the 6-month grind of the season, you know, the ups and downs, because it's pretty much all up, you know, preseason prep. It's all kind of, you know, getting excited for players, figuring out the puzzle, and then the Vegas trip and the onlines. That's just like that's just a beautiful part of the game. And then it gets ugly for 6 months, and then you're like, I'm not doing that again. And then, like, you know, 2 months later, you're like, all right, let's go. You know, I play football too, so that's a little different for me. I have to start to. I know you do, Vlad. I think you do, Jay. I'm not sure if you play, but you know,
he plays really, really. I think you're like 10 NFC deep already,
are
right?
What are you playing?
I actually haven't gotten into big football yet. I'm okay. Partnering with Modique on a bunch of teams on the NFC and the FFPC. So,
sweet.
He's dragging me into football mode a little earlier than I normally go.
You know, we can multitask. I can do both. I can do both things at the same time. I'm about 8 drafts in already and 4 auctions already. I've done 4 football auctions already.
Wow.
And, I can't get enough auctions. I don't care. It's just so amazing. Yeah. Yeah. I balance that, you know, with, that's my little like outlet when baseball gets frustrating. I'm like, all right, I'll just go draft the football team. And, you know, as we just said, that's the fun part. So I can easily switch to the fun part if baseball is getting to be too much of a grind.
By the way, the Louis Robert Robert of football is Devin Achane, because I've seen, it's Achane, but then he says it's a cane and, or it's H. I don't know. Which is it now? And by the way, we should all draft him, but which is it?
Yeah, I think it's Achane, but, Achane. You know,
oh, see, I got them all.
That's kind of what I've heard. Yeah.
Last question here. Anything that stands out as far as like a best practices, so to speak, as far as what you would recommend to fantasy baseball partners, whether that be auction or just regular, like something they can incorporate into their routine or just something they can actively work on to just make the partnership stronger?
I think it's the psychology of the game, really. Obviously, you have to have generally a common approach to the game, a sense of player values and evaluation, and you have to be on the same page with that. That's goes without saying. But I've talked to a lot of people who partner because I want to see how they do it. And where I've seen some partnerships crumble is in the psychological part of it, where there's an imbalance between the players in the decision-making process. And one is kind of forced into like a backseat driver role, and they, some resentment that builds up, and they don't like, then they stop sharing their takes. And then if those takes would have ended up being right, it kind of breeds more resentment. So I think, you know, so even though Mike's a Hall of Famer in my book, and I think will be soon, as I say, he's on the Mount Rushmore. It's a 50-50 when we're partnering. Like I put myself right up there with him, and we have an equal say, we have equal accountability, we have equal responsibility for all the decisions we make. Like, I'm not his side piece, you know, we're like fantasy spouses, you know, like this is a marriage for 6 months, for better or worse. And, you know, there's always some bickering and, you know, but we don't point fingers, you know, we don't blame, we don't say, I told you so. Like, I think you have to have those values And, you know, well, you know, there might be a couple passive aggressive texts, you know, that might go when, you know, something that doesn't go exactly right. But, you know, we live and die as a team, and you have to, I think, have that equal relationship where you have respect and trust in each other, and you are able to kind of handle that element of a relationship, which it is. Partnership's a relationship. So I think it's more psychology than anything. And that's really, it's not easy to find someone you're that simpatico with. And honestly, we've been doing it for, I think, 6 years now, and we're finally getting into a really good groove, I think. And it's been great the whole time, but it takes a while to really create, you know, that circumstance where, you know, you can partner with someone at that high stakes level.
That's scary for the rest of us, Mark. You guys are just finding your groove. The real question Vlad wants to ask is, what best practices do you have for him to catch Mike in his auction championship?
He did just drop. He has taken an L. He did just drop Dansby Swanson. He finally gave up. I just looked. He's hitting 217.
Did he actually drop him this week?
I just looked at my Fab list before the thing, and I see him sitting there. So.
Interesting. I should read his article more. I actually checked the standings, Vlad. So, you know, I have to be, you know, I'll be objective here as far as my analysis. You know, obviously, I love both you guys, and it's a great battle. And I would love to see Mike win an overall. You know, he's come so close so many times. I know how much that means to him. That's kind of his, like, Mount Everest there. I see, like, 13 or 14 points for you, like, that are pretty much sitting there. I don't see a lot for Mike on current downside, maybe like 5 points. I think you could make him sweat down the stretch. I mean, I think it's going to be a pretty big hill to climb to get all the way, but you know, I think this could tighten up, and it always does. You know, you have a 30 point lead in July, and then it's 25 in early August, and then it's 15 in September 1st, and then it's 10, you know, and then you start really sweating. So it's always tough to be the hunted. But I think your team's solid, and you know, you have a lot of points just sitting there. If you get hot quick, you know, I think you can make a race of it.
You know, this might sound crazy and maybe anti-competitive, but honestly, if I can win the league and then just come in second overall to Mike, I think I'd be fine with that. Let's see what happens.
That has happened, right? Didn't that happen? I think that happened in the maybe like that, but
yeah.
I think it was Bob. He won the overall but lost his league. I think, yeah.
Yes,
I think
that yes, came in second. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other person was, I think, second or third overall. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. So we are going to get into some of this little trade deadline preview. Did want to just quickly touch on some of the pitchers that have been coming back. Before we do, going to take a quick break and a message from our sponsor. Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Underdog is now offering a new customer FTN special with up to $250 on your first time deposit. Best ball season is officially underway, and the easiest place to play is at Underdog Fantasy. Make your choice from slow or fast drafts, starting with the $3 puppy, all the way up to the $1,000 entry Mastiff. You can also challenge your friends in battles as small as two person up to the usual 12-person drafts. The Underdog app is so easy to use, and new best ball drafts are dropping each week. With the NFL season starting less than 2 months away, now is the time to start drafting to prepare for your home leagues. Sign up for the promo code. With the promo code FTN, claim your 50% deposit, offer up to $250 in bonus cash. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store, and don't forget to register with our promo code FTN to claim that 50% bonus. NFL season is almost here, and who better to celebrate it with than Underdog Fantasy. All right, we are back here with Jason Anthony and our guest, Mr. Mark Winoker, and talk a little bit about some of the pitchers that are coming back. Robbie Ray, it's been quite a while since Robbie Ray's back, tight pants, grunting and all, back for the San Francisco Giants, and he looked really good today. What was that line? You must be happy with it, Jason.
Yeah, really good. Was a little scary in the first inning. I think he hit two batters and walked a run in, two walks. He actually threw five innings tonight, no hit ball, but two walks and two hit batters in the first inning. But once he settled down out of that inning, he just dealt eight strikeouts. He's going to be a pretty penny in Fab this weekend for anybody that needs strikeouts. I can't exactly say wins being a Giants fan right now. It's been rough, but it's nice to see him back on the mound. It'll be interesting kind of how the Giants do this, because they got a kind of a glut of arms coming back now, and we'll see how they kind of finagle that rotation.
And he's going to be obviously a big fab target. That obviously could have gone a completely different way. I mean, I kind of figured Robbie Ray probably looked pretty good on the way back here, or in this first start back. Of course, there's always a little hesitation, guy coming back from Tommy John. And of course, it can just be like the, you know, he pulls you in and then he just, you know, starts beating you over the head with earned runs. But seems like a popular target. Not that a lot of people have, you know, tons of money left. By the way, Mark, how are you with your fab budget for the rest of the year? Not to give too much away, but is Robbie Ray somebody you'd be looking to bolster your staff with?
Oh, I wish I could. Yeah, I'm kind of in the 220, low 200s pretty much across most of the teams. I can afford maybe $25 a week on average, per team. But I have a couple teams where I do have a little more. I will absolutely be going for him. I've always been a Ray guy. And wow, what a first impression he just made. And I doubt I'll get him. I know people have just been laying in wait for these guys. And I've been on record, to be honest, saying that I thought maybe it was a mistake to hold back so much money, because a lot of these guys come off these long injuries. It's really hard to come right back and be effective. But, you know, when you have one data point already of him showing that, I think that people will just will go bananas for him this week. So I doubt I'll be getting him anywhere.
Walker Buehler on line one.
Exactly. I mean, even Snell took like a month to get back to, you know, to being good. So, yeah.
Too soon, Mark.
I thought Clayton Kershaw, I guess I've had this game on in the background with Glass now, and now I realize that I thought Kershaw was going to start Wednesday, but looks like
they pushed him to Thursday. Yeah.
Dave Roberts accidentally stated that he would start him Wednesday. Got it. So he messed up. Roberts messed it up himself. So Kershaw's back. What are your expectations, Jason, of Kershaw in this first start and in the rest of the season?
You know, I'm surprised that he's back. I thought there was a pretty good chance we weren't going to see him this year. As a Dodger fan, you got to be pretty excited to have him back on the mound. You know, he's going to be one of those guys we look back in 15, 20 years, we didn't appreciate how good he was. The guy is amazing, and he's aged really well. I know the injuries and the playoff record have kind of tarnished his name a little bit, but the guy, the ratios are elite. It's just a matter of, can he pitch enough innings to get through 5-6 innings and get the win, because his ratio should be good. He's still a strikeout an inning. If he can keep that velocity up to, you know, low 90s and not drop to the high 80s, I think he could be a good pickup.
And I myself, I mean, I don't have a lot of money left. Usually most of my leagues are in the hundreds in the auction there with Mike. I do have a little bit more, I think like high 200s. But now is the time where this, you know, in the auction overall, I had what was, you know, the most points for pitching for a very long time. And you know, at some point you can just sort of feel it that the other shoe's going to drop. You just know these things are not sustainable all season long. Glasnow gets injured at some point, of course, you know, whether it's Phantom or not, he was getting a little beat up before he went out with the back injury. Renato Lopez is not going to keep a 1.5 ERA all year. Garrett Crochet, of course, he's going to start to get limited. So these things start to pop up, and instead of these dependable starts, you're now having to, like, you know, get a little, you have to like not be as snobby. You're looking, okay, wait, shoot, I might have to start Andre Pallante. And I don't feel like blemishing my team like that, but I have no choice. I need to keep up with K's and all that kind of stuff. So I'm hoping maybe I can sneak some of these guys, the Cobbs, Kershaw's, Rays, these Springs guys coming back, because not everyone can spend on everyone, basically.
I think that's a good strategic point you make as well. You tend to focus your fab spending, at least early on, perceived weaknesses. And oftentimes your strengths later become weaknesses and you regret not shoring up, you know, or just keep building. And that's particularly with baseball pitching. You know, everyone says it, you cannot have too much pitching, and in fantasy or real baseball, and that is true. And I find that happens a lot. And oftentimes you'll get lulled into a false sense of security, like, oh, Sean Manaea is going to, you know, he doesn't have a 3 ERA all season. You know, like, I'm good. Like, a lot of your early season success stories turn in the second half, and all of a sudden you spent all, like, $800 on either closers or hitting, and now you have no money for pitching, and now you have, like, 4 reliable pitchers and maybe, you know, a couple of closers. So just a good note that you should always just keep building your pitching, even, you know, when you think it's a strength and not a weakness.
Yeah, when you think you have too much pitching, you need more pitching, right? It's the kind of the old adage. There's a young hot prospect just got called up. I know the DC community is pretty excited. Chase McDermott on the Orioles pitched today. So I didn't actually see how his start with. Did you guys see how he did today?
Not good. Not great. Marlins. Yeah, he got, I think, Josh Bell hit one of his rare home runs against him, and then. So I don't recall the line offhand, but when I looked at the score, it was like third inning and they were down 6.
Well, you got to drop him if Josh Bell's hitting home runs off him.
That's the sign.
4 innings pitch, 5 hits, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts, 3 runs. So not the best start, but not terrible. I guess could be worse.
Well, it's also one of those things where DC players didn't have him in the lineup, right? Because this call-up came after the deadline, or, you know, after lineups locked for Monday. So we'll see. I mean, Baltimore by next week could already have somebody they've added. In fact, maybe somebody we might be talking about here in a little bit. Any other pitchers you wanted to touch on, Jay?
A couple other ones. Alex Cobb on the Giants is going to be making his season debut either this week or next. I'm trying to look at the RotoWire projected starters to see if he's penciled in. They haven't gotten to him yet, so I don't. He might be versus Colorado, or he should be back next week. He's a guy with that defense behind him, could be sneaky for wins and ERA strikeouts. Jeffrey Springs, right around the corner. Another guy should be really interesting coming back off the Tommy John injury. How is he going to perform? You got Drew Rasmussen. That's little behind Springs. Jacob DeGrom throwing bullpens. This is kind of rare, it feels like, with fantasy baseball, get with about 10 weeks left and you have all this this firepower coming into the free agent bidding. So like Mark was saying, you know, these people that have saved all that money, I'm fascinated to see what these bids are going to be like this week and then moving forward for the Springs, DeGrom, Rasmussen. And then you have, you know, the super prospect Jackson Job coming as well.
You know, what's interesting is it's something else to now think about and prepare for. Because they're now these cycles of Tommy John pitchers. Like, if you just like maybe keep a list, you can look it up on Roster Resource. But then there will come a fat period when it's Sandy Alcantara with Brandon Woodruff coming back, and, you know, Strider, and like these guys. I mean, sometimes we even forget who they are because there's so many of them. But you know, maybe that's something we can even think about, prepare for, and pre-strategize on next season. And I'm thinking specifically on a couple of the pitchers you mentioned. Alex Cobb I've had stashed on the main event for what's been like, I think, 3 weeks now. Just keep waiting for him to come back. And you got to remember, these things take time, and you don't want to rush, you know, have somebody rush back and then just, you know, you play him for one start in a important rotation spot, and you're only getting like 3-4 innings out of him and no chance for a win. So it's really dangerous. Jeffrey Springs, I think, is going to get babied a little bit. I don't think he's going to be going 5 innings right off the bat. Yeah, I think it's possible, but we'll see. And then with Kershaw, I had just random gut feel prediction. They obviously don't always work out, but that it is that he is going to have an absolute gem against the Giants. He's going to somehow be efficient enough to pitch 5 innings, even though I think he's capped at like maybe 70 pitches. Then we'll all go for him, spend big, and then he'll get like crushed by the Padres. And I think he gets the Phillies the following week, and just like, you know, on and on. So don't take that to, you know, to the universe. I actually hope he does well, but just like a random gut feeling that sometimes hit.
Did you have Ty for dinner again? You know, nobody shoves against the Giants, Vlad. Come on. It's probably indigestion again.
Ty? No, I love, first of all, I love Ty. Oh, yeah, we talked about it. No, that was the episode you weren't on, Sammy.
Sammy Reed stepped in. Sammy got into it real good with the Ty food.
Yeah. This is total side note. I've eaten less in the last 2 weeks than I have in my entire life. And I think maybe I did tweet about it on Twitter, but I usually eat like crap. I try to have a few healthy meals a week, but like, I love potato chips. I eat late at night, and I've got a work trip, non-fantasy, coming up And I tried on some suits, my suits that I last wore 9 months ago at the last conference, and they didn't fit. I'm, you know, 15 pounds up than, you know, my usual weight. And it freaked me out. And I'm going to my wife, like, you know, hey, I'm going to go get, you know, get some new suits and blah, blah, blah. She's like, the hell you are. You, it's like, first of all, do you have time for all that? Get them tailored, like all this extra money. Like, she's like, just lose the weight. I'm like, are you crazy? Do you think that's, how the heck can I, you know? But that day I literally cut out sugars, carbs, all these things I love. The first few days have been absolute hell, but I'm now like 2 weeks later, you know, I like doing intermittent fasting. I know this is a fantasy baseball podcast, but hey, where else can I talk about these things? But I feel freaking great. I don't know what to say. I don't know how long I'll keep it up. You know, kids were having some French fries today. I was hella tempted, but you know, we'll see how long it goes.
You're looking good too, Vlad. That $100 I gave your wife to take in your suits to make you feel fat, it finally paid off. So that joke's finally come to fruition.
I'll add a couple under the radar that I probably shouldn't be saying out loud, but I'm hoping to maybe sneak them in.
We'll bleep them out for you, Mark.
Okay, no, it's all good. Now, you know what? We're here to help people. I think Criswell on Boston, after shoving against the Rockies in Coors, and Festa again coming in, I think as the second, and I think with 7 or 8 strikeouts. You know, both uncertain futures, but I think, you know, I honestly have not looked ahead to see what their matchups are. I think Criswell doesn't have the greatest. I mean, actually, maybe Seattle next week, and then maybe it gets ugly. But anyway, I think those are two, you know, after today's or yesterday performances, maybe they fall through the cracks with all of the other firepower, and you can still sneak them in for cheap. But I think both have some talent, and, you know, sometimes it's the second time around for these rookie pitchers where, you know, like Thorpe, like, you know, they all of a sudden hit. And that's just another strategy point for next year. I've talked to Mike about already. It's like, instead of paying up the first time they come up, just wait till they get recycled and come back the second time and get them for $5. And you have the same pitcher with the same upside as 2 weeks or a month ago, and you paid, you know, a tenth of the price.
Yeah, that's great strategy. That's why we pay Mark the medium bucks here at FTN. You know, before we jump into the trade deadline, I got a question for both you regarding rest of season strategy. Do you guys feel with this little of time left, and I know 10 weeks is a long time, but realistically, when somebody's injured, it's not. Do you feel stashing an injury pays off with this little time left, or is it just about getting at bats now? I'll just use an example of Bo Bichette, who anybody that listens to this know I was really high on in the year. I dropped him in all my 15s and 12s this last week, you know, is that going to be regretful if he comes back in 3 weeks and he, you know, where is your guys' heads at with stashing injuries and call-ups for, you know, the rest of the season with that? I'll start with Mark.
I drop a shed in one of my two leagues. I have a really good middle infield setup, and I haven't regretted it one bit. I just have gotten just uber frustrated. That being said, wow, he could be a value next year. I definitely could see coming back in on him if he's healthy. And I don't know if, you know, how the Blue Jays look. Well, you can look at it one of two ways, right? If a guy's out for 3 weeks and you're stashing, you could say to yourself, well, there's only 10 weeks. That's 30% of the season. I can't have a guy sit there and not contribute for 30 weeks. Or you could say, well, he'll be back for 7 weeks. So that's 70% of the season remaining. And I got this guy who could be a difference maker. So I think you could talk yourself either way. I think it has to be either a difference maker or a real area of need. Like you, like that position has been tough for you all season. You have a guy sitting there and he could fill that position. You know, obviously we know like the Caminero's of the world are have all the upside and could, you know, for 2 months could go completely bonkers and win you a league. So that's a difference maker that I've been stashing in a bunch of leagues. Otherwise it's maybe a positional need to say, hey, in 3 weeks, I'll finally cure my corner infield or whatever closer. So I think you can look at it, you know, either of those ways.
This is a really great topic and the timing of it is great. And Jason, I don't know if you popped into the, one of the Discord channels at FTN today, but that's exactly what we were talking about, where somebody was talking about, I forgot who the player specifically was, but how they stashed an injured player and then they suck when they return. It's a double whammy. And lo and behold, here comes, you know, our resident attorney in the thread, Mike Mager, comes in and writes like this amazing thing. And it's like, actually, it's a four whammy, a quadruple whammy. And he literally lists out the point, you know, legal style of, you know, what those are. And I won't go into the details. Be a sub and come join and read it yourself. But it's like, it was really illuminating, like all the damage that happens when you stash. And, you know, for me, I think that I want to do a study on this. It's something I want to do in the off season, because I think the hit rate on these injured player stashes is very low. I know that's kind of a blanket statement, and, you know, kind of just speaking from experience or you know, just assumptions, but I think that's what it come down to. And not just on this, based on this season, maybe it's more so this season than the past seasons, but I really think that's a thing. And so we go back to preseason where people are like, oh, you should never stash, but there's everything is context driven, right? And it's team dependent. It's league dependent. There's so many factors involved. You can never just take a blanket. Oh, I'll never stash. I should always, you always look into each situation. What I've realized myself is I've had better success with not taking zeros in my lineup or not having an issue where I have a stash on my bench and I can get someone good in my lineup or just an active player because I dropped the right guy at the right time. Additionally, I feel like the really good players at this time of year, your overall, you know, Phil, Drew, Forte, all these guys, and Drew was actually in the Discord talking about today, they are like cutthroat about these drops. Like, you remember Phil, the year he won, he dropped his first overall pick, Jacob DeGrom, just kind of got ahead of it. You got to be able to do that. Like, you don't get style points at the end of the season for having Kyle Tucker in your lineup, right? It's like, you know, he might be back in September, like him, Yamamoto, Bichette, you know, yes, those guys failed you. It sucks, but who's the best guy to come in and step into your team now? In my auction league, for example, had I not made the decision to just, like, you know, I forgot who it was, but I cut somebody that might come back at some point, come back to bite me, but I really needed to have a sixth outfielder, got Juan Yepes for like $2, and that's paid off in strides instead of me taking like a zero from Luis Rengifo. So those type of things all add up. They matter. All of this to say is, I want to do a study in the off season about stashes, injured stashes, because I think it's just dangerous in the long run.
That's great points. And, you know, there's two different types of stashes. You have the injury stash and then you have the call-up stash. And there's no guarantee either one of them plays well when they come up. A lot of time it takes the call-ups, you know, one, two, three times through it, like Mark was just referring to with these pitchers, they don't come up and succeed right away. Hitters, same thing. So the stashes are fascinating. Like, it felt gross, but I dropped Parker Meadows for Gio Urshela last week, and it was just to make sure I had at bats. And will I regret it? I don't know, but I'm chasing at bats. They might not be as good as at bats if Parker Meadows comes back, but there's no news, and so it's trying to learn from the better players, right? The cutthroat Carls, like you said, Vlad, these good players, doesn't matter your name. It's what are you going to do for me the rest of the season? And then, you know, make a decision from there.
And all right, let's get in. Yeah, this is, I mean, that can be just like a full topic, but on its own, a whole podcast on its own, but let's run through some of these trade scenarios. Let's start with the big outfielders, guys that look to be moving. Jazz Chisholm, Randy Arozarena, Luis Robert Jr. Mark, how do you feel about these three guys? Where do you think they land? I feel like there are a lot of similar teams, like all the big playoff teams are kind of fighting for all these guys. Just a couple of quick notes about them. Luis Robert Jr., I heard that three teams had sent minor league scouts to their affiliates, specifically from the Dodgers, the Padres, and Mariners are all being scouted for a potential Luis Robert Jr. trade. You've got Randy Arozarena connected to the Dodgers, potentially. All these guys are connected to the Dodgers, by the way. Jazz Chisholm, last week it was maybe the Mariners or the Royals. Yankees came out and said that he just doesn't fit, or which, you know, I don't know. It's a bunch of BS right there. And then Pirates. I mean, I saw a note, something about, I forgot where I read it, but how, like, being on the Pirates and maybe having a locker next to Andrew McCutchen would be a good thing for him. So maybe not best from a fantasy perspective, but I don't know. Where do you guys, where do you mark? Where do you think these guys land? What do you think of them?
I think the Jazz one is the most interesting. He is my most owned player, so he's the one I'm definitely most interested in. I think if he landed in a good spot, he could be the number one fantasy player for the last 2 months of the season. He could absolutely go nuclear. And I think the Yankees is the best spot for him. I think I just watched that game tonight, and I've in all the years of being a fan, you're talking 50 years now, I've never felt bad for the Yankees. But tonight I was like, wow, this is rough, man. They look horrendous, totally lifeless. You know, he doesn't seem like he's a favorite. You know, he was named the most overrated player, you know, by The Athletic. You know, Jeff Passan just was talking about his brashness. You know, these are all kind of code words. I think the Yankees need that kind of energy and a real infusion of enthusiasm from what I could tell from watching him the last few nights. So I think they're just blowing smoke about, you know, his personality not fitting in the clubhouse. I don't think he has a lot of facial hair, so that might not be an issue. And they're probably just trying to bring the price down a little. So I think he would be fantastic if he landed with the Yankees. He's the one I'm most keeping my eye on and hoping it's a good competitive team with a good park effect for him and maybe could ride him to a couple championships here if he can land somewhere well.
Yeah, he getting out of Miami could be huge. It's awfully fun discussing the Royals and the Pirates as possible buyers. It kind of shows the state of baseball right now, and I think they've a lot of successful changes they've made, getting more teams involved. I went through all the teams, and man, there's just not a lot of sellers. So the price is going to be high for these guys. You know, it's not necessarily for me with fantasy about where the player getting traded is going. It's what opens up behind him and who gets to step in to fill that roster spot, that starting second baseman or center fielder or what, that somebody gets a chance for every day at bats all of a sudden can really help your fantasy team for cheap because everybody's directed on where's Jazz playing. So say he gets traded to the Phillies. And now who's playing center fielder for the Marlins? You know, all of a sudden that spot opens up and you could get just as much production from that because somebody has a chance and gets hot for a month, 2 months, than, you know, paying what you got to pay for whatever, the closer that gets traded or whatnot. But it's all fascinating to me. I don't see Luis Robert getting traded. I think the price will be high enough where with him and Garrett Crochet, it'll be difficult. Definitely see Randy Arozarena getting moved. I see the Tampa Bay Rays burning that thing down this year. I think Zach Eflin's going, Brandon Lowe or Lowe, Isaac Paredes, Yandy Diaz could get moved if he ever comes back to play baseball again. So it'll be interesting what happens in Tampa. But, you know, obviously the Dodgers have a big hole. I don't know how much salary they can take on or not, but it's going to be a fun week. And I think Vlad said it good, was trade deadline's Tuesday. There's a lot of speculation for us this weekend in Fab, but the real big Fab period is going to be the week after because all the stuff's going to play out. Usually with the trade deadline, it's always, not always, but the closer situations where the big money's spent for that.
So I'm just thinking about it, what the Yankees are doing here. Jazz really is a perfect fit for them. And Marky really said it best. And I do feel now that I'm like, on his, you know, I've been on his side obviously all year and he's my this year's Yelich and everything. But like, I feel like that Athletic thing, when I kind of dug into it more, it was just like a select poll of 12 players only. That's who did the vote on that. So, you know, just there, I feel like there's more Jazz hate, than, you know, there should be for him. But listen, the Yankees need a leadoff man. They've got, you know, the Ben Rice thing was nice for a weekend, right? Hit the three home runs against, you know, in his hometown. But yeah, I mean, other than that, they're just flailing. They played Gleyber Torres at, you know, a leadoff. Obviously DJ LeMahieu is, you know, pretty close to retirement. Don't know when Jason Dominguez is going to be back. Like, they're hurting. They need a leadoff man. They need a little spunk. So I would love to see him make it there. As for Arozarena, I do think probably he'll end up with the Dodgers. I think the rumor that we've seen over the last 48 hours, him going there, does really kind of make sense. Dodgers and Rays have a long history of, you know, trade history among them. Could be like a package deal. Maybe we get like an Eflin or somebody like that as well. So a lot of movement there. Where do you think they, any of those guys land? Do you have like any like straight up prediction for any of those three?
I personally do not, mark you.
No, I really don't. It's a total mystery. Just a Rosarena, I mean, can only get better, right? I mean, it's just been a total disaster season for him. You'd have to think any change of scenery could help him. So he's one where I would just get out of Tampa Bay and go somewhere else and maybe, you know, ignite for the last couple months. So he's one I really wouldn't worry about where he lands from a fantasy perspective. It's weird. The Mets are kind of on the borderline here. And I know that's maybe later in the show, but you know, why not, you know, Rosarena could be an interesting, you know, fit there potentially. They could afford some of these guys, I think.
As for a couple of the pitchers, obviously there's a big market for them. A lot of teams that are going to be going after them. I read something about the Padres badly wanting pitching, especially with unknown future of Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove. So there could be some movement. I'm not sure there's fire with the smoke on the Tarik Skubal, rumors. From what I hear, it would have to be like a massive, massive deal, a group of players for it to actually happen with the Orioles. And I remember reading it was like Kobe Mayo and Heston Kjerstad and Chase McDermott. It's like this like insane amount. I mean, Skubal is literally the best pitcher in baseball. I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen, but I know that the Dodgers are trying. The Orioles are trying. You got to try, right? I mean, you're in the business. And then Garrett Crochet, the interesting thing about him is I read something that he might not be as likely to be dealt as we thought he would be in the first few weeks. The White Sox might just want to take a risk that he can stay healthy and kind of they manage him through the rest of the season. And, a pitcher coming off a year like that, healthy with 140 or so innings, has a lot more value. So they would get a lot more in return if they were to hold him. I think they'd really have to be compelled to be able to make a deal to get rid of him and Robert.
Yeah. One of my bold predictions is Skubal or Crochet gets traded. And I think it's to Baltimore. I think they're almost guaranteed to make a trade at this point with all the prospects they have. You can't have all those guys knocking at the door and not coming up. I think they're going to be willing to part with quite a package for it. I don't know if it's Skubal or Crochet, but I'm fairly confident one of them is going to Baltimore. You know, the other big arm is Jack Flaherty. And it's interesting. He was on Baltimore last year in a relief role. So I don't see him going back there. So their market, and there isn't other name to talk about. It's on the Giants and Blake Snell. There's no guarantee they don't move him with the excess pitching they have. And even Robbie Ray, he has an opt-out after this year. I think he's got an opt-out when he's due $25 million the next 2 years. I mean, if he looks like he does tonight, he might be gone. So Giants might be smart to try to recoup some of that. So there are some other arms, but I have a feeling we're going to see some fireworks here with these teams that are going to be desperate to get that ace because they're ahead of schedule or just they're there and just need that one more arm.
Yeah, I think with Crochet, it's maybe a tell that they've started to wind him down a little bit. You know, if they were maybe trying to move him, I think they would have probably kept him ramped up because whoever they trade him to is going to want to get innings out of him. So that might be a tell. Yeah, as a Skubal owner, wow, I would hate to see him get moved just because, I mean, it can't get much better. He's just been incredible. And, you know, you go to a different place, expectations, you overthrow a little bit, selfishly, I hope he doesn't move. But, yeah, from a fireworks standpoint, it would be great to see him on a team like the Orioles. I mean, the Tigers are a team, I think, they've made a lot of strides. So it would seem to be a strange move to me if they would let him go. But it's baseball. If they could get a huge, huge package, they might go for it.
Yeah, they'll whatever team is like, yeah, as long as you don't throw in Spencer Torkelson, we've got a deal. What about the Blue Jays noticing that obviously the Bo Bichette injury perhaps kind of throws him off the market, although I hear his value per se by general managers hasn't been too diluted, but there was something I read about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who, by the way, is on fire lately, open to joining the Yankees. And this is walking back comments from 2022 when he said he would never sign for the Yankees, not even dead. I assume it means if not even if he's dead. But Guerrero Jr., I would feel really bad for my Toronto friends, especially starting, you know, when Ohtani didn't get on that plane, you know, down to just like a fall apart. Like, I feel bad for my friends within certain organizations when things fall apart. I know they don't feel bad for me when the Dodgers fall apart.
Is there anything worse going from Ohtani to Isaiah Kiner-Falefa? He's been great, but as a Blue Jays fan, like, to actually have that as an actual hope and then what they pivoted to in the offseason, you know, I believe it's time to blow up the Blue Jays as constructed. Springer is hot. Maybe trade him if they could. I don't think they can trade Bichette now because he's injured. I don't see them trading the stars. I would say Kikuchi gets traded. I think that's a pretty no-brainer for them. And then maybe the back end of the bullpen. I know Mark and I were talking offline. Yimi Garcia, I'm heavily invested in him. I'd be really sad if he moved, but him and Chad Green are some alluring bullpen arms for some contenders, because the Blue Jays are not going to be making the playoffs this year, it looks like.
It's really interesting. You know, I'm not deep into, but I'm prepping for fantasy football, and it's a lot of team context stuff for football, right? New coordinator, new philosophy, et cetera, et cetera. And it's similar with baseball, right? Before the season, we tag certain teams as being good teams that have good offenses that will, you know, provide plenty of production. And it seems like it's always the Blue Jays, at least for me. I'm always like, this is, you know, great offense, you know, da, da, da. And God, they just keep underperforming. So can you just keep doing the same thing over and over again, expect different results? Probably not. So they might have to shake it up here and, you know, just kind of do a soft reboot maybe and keep some core and get rid of and try to get something. I'm not sure what they can get for Kikuchi. He's been a maddening pitcher. For me, I actually was one of only five people to drop him this past week in an OLAC. I just got fed up with his, you know, how hard he's getting hit, and just got a 5 ERA, 1.3 guy doesn't do much for me. You know, great Ks, but that's about it. But if he got moved, he actually could have more value, because, you know, his win potential would go up. So they're probably going to do something pretty strong. And I agree with Jason. Hopefully it's not Yimi.
I wonder out loud if the Dunedin season is not only messing with us as fantasy players, but that front office and how to evaluate that team, because those stats looked like a juggernaut of an offense. But ever since even the last half of that season, when they got back home to Toronto, the numbers died off. So Vlad's a monster. He is, but anybody Thank else you. In that, yes, both Vlad, that we're talking about are monsters, especially skinny Vlad on the podcast here with us. But yeah, it's interesting that half season, that COVID season, when they had to play at the AAA ballpark and they just offense went nuts. I think it really threw their team for a loop.
By the way, there's going to be some dimension moving at this apparently very nice hitting hitter-friendly ballpark in Sacramento, because right now the A's are the highest scoring team in baseball over the last month. Brett Rooker, along with Lawrence Butler, and then a Rocky Brenton Doyle, who had a grand slam his first career on Wednesday. They're basically the three hottest players in the month of July, which is amazing. These guys are going to Sacramento next year. You know, already looking, reading the pre-draft tea leaves, people are gonna be like, oh, let's draft all the A's. It's going to be all about the A's. It's going to be like another Dunedin season. And then right after we draft them all, they're going to be like, oh, sorry, we had a, you know, ballpark adjustment, and now this field has been moved out here or whatever. I don't know if that's possible, like, logistically, but, you know, just something I thought of.
I think Rooker is low key potential for a trade here. He's been got to be a top five fab pickup for the year. Just been an unbelievable productive player. So I could see, you know, because the hitting looks a little thin for trades. I could definitely see him potentially moving.
I wanted to save the best for last, and that's specifically for you, Mark, with the Mets. But let's wrap things up with the closers and the potential there. So before we do, let's talk about your amazing Mets. Who do you think is leaving? How do you see this roster shaping up after the trade deadline?
I mean, they're playing really well right now. As we mentioned, you know, Lindor is really carrying them. You know, they just took two from the Yankees. So this is probably the high point of the season. They're currently, I think, in a playoff spot. So I think their fortunes have wildly changed from a month or two ago. So I'm guessing they're maybe buying, but, you know, I think obviously with Scott out, it sounds like he's maybe not going for Tommy John right away, but I don't see him back this year in any meaningful way. If they're going to be buyers, they need pitching. They need another arm for sure. They want to have a six-man rotation with Senga coming back. So they've kind of, you know, wound Budo down. So I'm not sure he'll be starting anytime soon. So I think they need pitching. They obviously need bullpen help. The back's gotten a little more solid with Budo and Nunez there with Diaz, but they still need some arms there. Ottavino has been really, really rough. So if they're buying, I think it's pitching and bullpen help. Their offense seems to really be strong. If somehow in the next 10 days or week, whatever it is, they fall apart again and they're sellers, you know, you have, you know, Quintana, Minaya could go. Maybe JD Martinez potentially could go. And then, you know, I think the big elephant in the room is Alonso and what his future is with the Mets. Could they buy and sell? You know, could they sell Alonso to get what they need from a pitching perspective, knowing that it's going to be very hard to re-sign him with Boris as his agent, and he's had a pretty year. I don't think he's going to get anywhere near the contract that Boris is going to try to ask for him, and I don't think the Mets are going to, you know, and Stearns are going to buy into it. I don't think they value that position and that profile as much as Alonso and Boris do. So, you know, he could maybe move and, you know, they could still be trying for this year. I think they may have enough offense. They could maybe bring Beatty back, move Vientos to first possibly. And I still think have enough offense if they can, you know, want to get some pitching. I'd hate to see him go, but, you know, again, it's baseball and you got to do what's best for the team.
Yeah, I was reading something with their salary cap situation or salary situation. If Alonso leaves, they only get a fourth round pick back as far as a compensatory. So if they don't think he's going to re-sign, that's a big loss, because what they could get for him at the trade deadline would be pretty impactful as far as even, you know, like you said, like the buy sell where you're giving up a big piece of your team, but you're also bringing in littler pieces that actually make your team better.
A quick thing I wanted to mention that's related to this is just like something I was thinking about earlier from a fantasy strategy perspective is how I think next year I'm going to be more mindful of the earlier rounds, about avoiding players that don't steal bases and are more sort of batting average averse, but with big power. And what I mean specifically is when draft season first started and I heard that before me even looking at ADP, because I like to kind of do my own thing first, and I hear, oh, Pete Alonso's second rounder. And this is, I think, before he kind of moved into the third. And I'm looking, I'm like, wait, why did Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor going so close to each other? I understand, yes, you got the 50 home run upside and all that, but like, you know, what if it's a bit of a down season or a repeat of last year's batting average? Why are they so close in value? And now I'm looking at their stats, and of course, Alonso's having a bit of a down year. I mean, Lindor has more home runs than him right now. He's got more runs and RBI, and he's got 20 stolen bases compared to his, you know, two. So he's just crushing them across the board. Lindor has been like a top 10 player. And so, you know, I think about like a Matt Olson, for example, who's been amazing always, but is kind of in the same profile. Big power, obviously part of a good team, but when things fall apart, they really fall apart. And he's ended up being a second round bust, shockingly. Maybe next round he'll go in the fourth round and he'll be a steal. But that's one thing, if you guys have a comment on it, but just kind of like me being mindful of those guys who can have huge fluctuations in runs and RBI, but can hurt you in average and don't have speed.
Yeah, for me, it's not necessarily the lack of speed. It's the combination of lack of speed and batting average that you got to avoid. I was big on Aaron Judge this year. No speed there, especially with the toe coming in the year, but I thought he could have a big advantage everywhere else. So far, so good with that. But I've been power starved the last two or three years ever since the Happy Fun Ball. So I made a conscious effort to get more power, more RBIs, but the batting average with the Alonso, you know, it was everybody. I remember, you know, picking Acuna first pick, get the wrap, you take Alonso, you got your power, you got your speed, you're in a good shape. But nobody talked about the batting average between those two. I mean, if Acuna didn't hit 330 again, and obviously that didn't work, but just in general, when you have a 220 hitter going in the third round, that's tough. That's Kyle Schwarber, right? And Schwarber's hitting 260 this year, but you know, if he hits 210, it just torpedoes everything else around it.
Yeah, there's just less outs, you know, when you have a player who's three category as opposed to a five category contributor, right? If Lindor has a down power year, but he steals, you know, 30 bases, then you're kind of making up for it. Alonso doesn't have the speed at all. And then, you know, the average he's had a couple of years in 270. So like Judge, it was possible, but he has to hit average. So he has, so that's just one out. If he doesn't hit average, he's not going to pay off that draft spot where like Lindor can miss one category and still get there.
Last thing here, and then we'll do like a quick little question I have for you all. Let's talk real quick about the bullpens, how things are going to shake up, and if there are some potential fab buying opportunities. A little preview on that. I think we are all familiar with the names that are most likely to be moved, and guys like Carlos Estevez on the Angels. Of course, you got Luis Garcia, Ben Joyce there. Kyle Finnegan, not even sure who's in that pen if he does go, now that Hunter Harvey is on the Royals, who, by the way, might be a sneaky ad after MacArthur gave up 5 earned runs on Wednesday. You've got the Toronto guys. Jordan Romano is persona non grato there. Chad Green and Yimi Garcia could be dealt as well. And then, of course, the Tanner Scott rumors. And so I'm hoping that AJ Puck is that guy. He's the one that I have on a few teams. Got a win, actually, on Tuesday, which was nice for those that had him in the lineup. And he's been really good after not working out as a starter. So, Jason, start with you. Who do you think moves? What do you think are some of the after effects, and who might we be able to bid on who could be sneaky this weekend?
I have planted my flag on Ben Joyce. I picked him up everywhere the last two or three weeks. He's cut down on the walks, you know, throwing 104. I think it's a splinker that he's throwing, like Johan Duran. He's just been good. And, you know, if the Angels trade Estevez, they really don't, they should be giving Joyce the runway to close for them, because he's going to be their closer for the next 5-6 years if he works out. Should be with bad team scares me, because the usage pattern has actually had Luis Garcia in a higher leverage spot than Joyce. So I'm taking a chance there. I'm pretty confident Estevez gets traded, but I'm hoping that Joyce is the guy. The other spot that is interesting, and I'm trying to figure out how to navigate, is the Tampa Bay situation. If Peter Fairbanks or Jason Adam or both get traded, who's the next guy in line? Or is it just a hodgepodge like Tampa has done in the past? So that's kind of where I'm looking. Washington really doesn't have a clear backup. If Finnegan gets traded, you have Tanner Rainey coming off injury, Dylan Floro, Derek Law. It's gross there. So it's, you want to have somebody that doesn't kill you getting your 6 saves the rest of the year. So you need the ratios too, whoever you're picking up.
How about you, Mark? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I got a few other potential situations. I think the Rangers in the next, next week is going to be determinative if they're going to sell or buy. I could see Yates maybe being a very popular target if they have to sell. I think Hector Neris is interesting. The Cubs are really on the precipice of being out of it. And I know, you know, he's I have him everywhere. So I've watched a lot of Neris. And let me tell you, that's not a fun thing to be doing with your time. But he has been, and I, you know, I don't think he would close anywhere, but, you know, he could potentially be an eighth inning guy, although I think his makeup is more of a closer. So that could be dangerous if they, if someone did try to pick him up. Kopech could be on the move, maybe. Jason Foley, Aroldis Chapman. So I think these are just some other situations. And I just, I have a weird feeling about Kenley and whether he's staying with the Red Sox. I think that's an interesting one. And I'm going to save my last one for, I think, the big finish here. But those are just some other situations. And what I would say is a lot of these, it's typically a bad team, right, who is selling off their closer. And, yes, we're looking for the next guy, but usually the next guy isn't that good, as Jason was implying, and the team isn't very good. So I don't see putting a lot of effort or resources into trying to get these we're going to be bottom three, bottom five closers on these teams. I know some teams will where they need it, and I'll keep an eye out. But I think oftentimes it's a losing proposition to try to add these guys. They're going to probably hurt you more than they're going to help.
And finally here, real quick on one trade that you believe is just going to come out of nowhere and just hit everybody over the head, get everybody riled up and talking. I'll start. I don't have a very exciting one. I'll have, I guess, maybe two. One is really not that exciting, but I do think Yusei Kikuchi is going to come to the Padres, and I think he will be rather decent. I feel your pain, Mark, with him. It's actually one of the reasons why I didn't want any part of it this year. It's a wild ride, and just those wild ride pitchers is just something that is really tough for me to stomach. But I do think he can come in and have some success, not on the Dylan Cease level, I don't think, but maybe a few good starts that could be helpful for people in August and September. My big one is that I think the Milwaukee Brewers are going to grab one of those big three outfielders, and this is with the Christian Yelich possibly out for the year, which obviously is a huge blow because he's had a tremendous season. There's some movement to be made there. They're going to have a big hole in that lineup without him, and they're in the mix, obviously, can really make a run. They need some pitching probably as well, but I do think they're going to go after one of those guys, whether it's Jazz, Luis Robert, or Arozarena. Not sure. But I think they're going to get one of them, maybe even Luis Robert.
That's good, Vlad. And I'm just like you. I can't follow instructions since you said one big trade and you gave two. I have two as well. one more realistic and then one kind of pie in the sky. The trade I think is going to happen, and I've kind of heard some rumblings, but it'd be a pretty big shakeup, is fantasy superstar Lane Thomas and Kyle Finnegan going to the Philadelphia Phillies. Man, it seems like Lane Thomas has a stolen base every day. I got him on a couple of really good teams. He's been fantastic. I don't know what that looks like for Kyle Finnegan if he goes there, but that would be really impactful, I think, for Lane Thomas in that lineup in Philadelphia as well. The fun trade I'm going to throw out there for Mark, the San Francisco Giants trade Blake Snell and Lamont Wade to the Mets for Pete Alonso.
Ooh, I like that. That would be a good challenge trade. I've never been the biggest Snell fan, but wow, I would become one very quickly if that were to happen. So I have two also. And it's more, you said no one sees coming. So Vlad, I thought you were going to steal mine, but it is a Brewer who I think could be on the move and maybe part of that trade you just said. And maybe this is just something that I thought I heard a lot of preseason, but Devin Williams, I think potentially could be on the move. He's on a 1-year deal. I think before the season, you know, there was some, I don't know if it was acrimony with his contract or what, but there was a lot of hullabaloo about him maybe getting moved at some point during the year. I think that was based on him being really good. And then, you know, maybe at the deadline, the problem is he's probably not going to be off his rehab in time. So I don't know if scouts are looking at him, but you know, they have McGill. He's been incredible. Another great pickup. So Devin Williams, maybe. And then this one, I don't know, but I'm picking on the Rangers a little bit, but Adolis Garcia, you know, he's on. Yeah. I wanted to get a little spicy. You know, he's at the end of his first year of a 2-year deal. He's 31. He's really struggled. I think he's picking up a little bit the last couple of days, but he could be a massive bat that someone could make a move for. If the Rangers fall out of it, he could be a big chip.
Jason. That makes a lot of sense, Mark, with Evan Carter coming back on the rehab shortly. So I didn't even think about that. That's why you're one of the best, my man. Good thinking.
Mark, cannot thank you enough for coming on. This is, I feel like this has been our most like professional and most informative episode that we have all season. And you know, thank you so much for coming on. I do want, I didn't mention it early on in the year, but you are, again, having an incredible season. You mentioned the auctions that you're in, and in the auction championship, you have two solo teams and one shared team. Is that right?
Two shared and one solo.
Two shared, one solo. They're all, two of them are in the top 10. The other one's just outside the top 10. So it's like incredible stuff. The way that you mentioned streamlining and the process, I think there's a lot that people can learn from you. So those that are still in the baseball zone and are always looking to kind of learn and gain more information, I think, you know, picking up what you're putting down, I think is very important. So thank you so much for coming on. And just want to ask you any, I don't know, you, like we said, you don't have a podcast, you're not an analyst, but do you have anything to promote? Or if not, perhaps maybe like some final words of wisdom.
Well, again, love being with you. This is like my mowing pod, like my 1 hour, just kind of in my own head. I put on my headphones, I go out with the electric mower and I listen to this podcast. So the fact that I'll listen to myself this weekend or tomorrow when I mow is pretty exciting for me. So thank you. You know, if I were to ever do a podcast, it would be auction content. You know, I think there's just such a underserved market there for both baseball and football. I think you could kind of have a year-round auction view. All the content is ADP, and it's just, I would love to grow the game, the auction game. I would really love to get more people doing the online auctions. So the only thing I would promote is do more auctions, people. And there, you know, it's such a thrill, and it's another skill you could add to your, you know, your skill set in fantasy. And honestly, I think the best players are the ones who do both, you know, who can crush snakes and they can crush auctions. To me, those are the people I look up to and that I always want to add them, because that shows just a complete continuum of fantasy skill and talent. And I think without the auction piece, it's, you know, your resume is missing something. So only thing I'd promote is more auctions.
Well, first time ever. I don't know if we got complimented or not to be in the lawn mowing podcast. but Mark, thank you so much for jumping on, man. It's always a pleasure talking to you, picking your brain. You're one of the best guys in the industry, in the NFBC. Love seeing you. Love chatting with you. Can't wait to see you in Vegas next year.
Same. Ladies, next.
You can follow him at MARC_WINOKUR. Mark, thank you so much again for coming on with us. For Mark, for Jason, I am Vlad. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.